God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Well, folks, we're moving right along with our study in the book of Daniel. Today, Brother Hutchings will be commenting on chapter 5, the handwriting on the wall chapter of the prophetic book. In just a moment, we'll have Southwest Radio's Vice President, Dr. Kenneth Hill, come and read the chapter before I ask Brother Hutchings about the passages. In this series, Brother Hutchings isn't doing a verse-by-verse study, but rather he's getting into the most important portions. You'll want to get a copy of the book to get a more detailed commentary. I'll tell you how to do that later in the program. But let's get started now with Dr. Hill reading the scriptures from Daniel chapter 5.
Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, whiles he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines, might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines, drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said unto the wise men of Babylon, Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house, and the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him. Whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences, and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, Art thou that Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jure? I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts. And his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords and thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing, Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet, put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old.
That was Dr. Kenneth Hill reading Daniel 5. Brother Hutchings, in your introduction to chapter 5, you say, and I'm quoting here from the book, as we study the book of Daniel, we should keep in mind that although it is a book of history, this is not its primary purpose. Even though it is historically correct in every detail, we could still inform ourselves of Babylonian history from secular records. In many places, the book of Daniel is entertaining and humorous because it depicts human weaknesses in real-life circumstances. We read in the second psalm that even God laughs at man in his folly. However, Daniel is not for our entertainment. Daniel is also a book of psychology because it reveals how men in their ambitions and greed think, act, and react. But Daniel is not for our psychological enlightenment. Daniel is a book of God's revealed truth concerning a plan and program which he is working out for the world through men and nations. So, Brother Hutchings, would you tell us about the fall of Babylon and how this event related to us today?
Certainly. We are going to go back first to the reign of Belshazzar. We've been considering the history of Babylon and the biblical history under Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 5 begins with a new king, Belshazzar, who was seemingly the king at least. And what happened to Nebuchadnezzar is not entirely clear, but we do find this new king who is on the throne. Chapter 4 ends in the year 562 BC, and chapter 5 is set in the year 538 BC. Therefore, about 26 years had elapsed between chapter 4 and chapter 5. Nebuchadnezzar died in 561 BC, the year after he gave his testimony. Now, Calvin doubted that he died a saved man. However, most believe that he was saved. Without doubt, the king fulfilled his purpose in the plan of God for the world. Therefore, he was taken from the scene. Now, Evil-Merodach, Nebuchadnezzar's son, succeeded him on the throne, and we find this in 2 Kings chapter 25. Now, Evil-Merodach ruled over Babylon, though for only 2 years, before Nergal-Sharezer, a son-in-law of Nebuchadnezzar, engineered the new king's assassination. But Nergal-Sharezer occupied the throne for only 4 years before he was killed. And history indicates that he died in battle. However, it is very possible that his political enemies may have killed him to make it appear that he died at the hands of the enemy. Now, after Nergal-Sharezer's death, his imbecile son, Lerbar-Sorshad, was placed upon the throne, and he was beaten to death by Nabonidus in the year 555 B.C. Nabonidus was a political opportunist who married the widow of Nergal-Sharezer so that he might gain the throne. Now, we know these are not too interesting historical facts, but we need to recite them or reference them so we can keep up with the changes within the government of Babylon in order to explain how Belshazzar was on the throne in 538 B.C. Now, for many years, critics of the Bible contended that Daniel was in error because there was no such man as Belshazzar mentioned in all of Babylonian history. According to secular records, Nabonidus was the last king of Babylon. However, more recent archaeological discoveries uncovered clay tablets on which the name Belshazzar, as the son of Nabonidus, is mentioned frequently. Jeremiah chapter 27, verse 7 would indicate that Belshazzar was probably the son of Evil-Merodach, a direct heir to the throne, and that he was adopted by Nabonidus in order to strengthen his claim to the throne and to keep the royal bloodline within the family. So all this happened within the lineage after the death of Nebuchadnezzar to find Belshazzar on the throne in 538 B.C.
And one of the things we find Belshazzar doing is throwing a party. Brother Hutchings, why would Belshazzar be throwing a party when the city was under siege by the Medes and the Persians?
Well, his father Nabonidus, the king of Babylon, was away in a distant province conducting a military campaign. His adopted son, Belshazzar, the second ruler of the kingdom, was serving in his absence. Now, the Medes and the Persians, who were rebelling against Babylonian domination, took advantage of the situation to march on Babylon and lay siege to the city. Now, in considering Babylon, we find that it was 15 miles square, a city about the size of Houston, Dallas, or Kansas City, or some other large American city. It had a population of 1 million people. Around the city was built a 125 feet high wall and 87 feet thick. Now, outside the inner wall, equally high, was a second wall. The second wall was 1/2 mile distance from the first wall, and between the two walls, there was 30 square miles of rich soil. Now, this area between the two walls was for just such an occasion as a siege by the Medes and the Persian, because even under siege, the city could produce enough food within its own walls to sustain the population. On top of the walls were 250 watchtowers, 400 feet high overall. On the outside of the wall was a deep water moat, 30 feet wide. Water from the Euphrates River kept the moat full at all times, and such a defense network around a city would present problems for a modern army, much less an army which had to attack with spears and bows and arrows and scale walls by using ladders. So it is no small wonder that Belshazzar was proud and confident during a period of siege. All they had to do was set tight until Nabonidus returned with the main force of the Babylonian army. So it is evident that Belshazzar took advantage of the opportunity to show off. Belshazzar was carried away with bravado and intemperance. He was going to throw a party the likes of which Babylon had never seen.
The vessels of the temple had been in the treasury now for 70 years, so why would this new vice ruler do such a thing as toasting the gods of Babylon out of these sacred cups and glasses that were to be used only for temple worship?
Well, doubtless many remembered that Nebuchadnezzar revered the God of the Hebrews, and at one time had even issued a decree that if anyone blasphemed the name of the God of the Jews, they would be cut up in little pieces. But here was Belshazzar openly defying Judah's God. The vessels used in the temple were dedicated to God's service, and they were all in some way used to tell God's redemptive story. The coming of the Messiah, his atoning death for the sins of the people, and all who desecrated the temple furniture, or the temple vessels, were sentenced to death. to defile the holy temples constituted the utmost in blasphemy and sacrilege. But Belshazzar defied God to stop him from drinking wine of the temple vessels, and he showed open contempt for the testimony of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, alcohol and drugs provide moral cowards with the courage to perform foolish acts. The influence of strong drink deludes men into thinking they can defy God. And inasmuch as there is prophetic significance for the Gentile nations at the end of the age and the fall of Babylon, we must conclude that this immoral party is quite symbolic of the degenerate conditions of the Gentile world at the time Christ returns. And this was a new experience for Belshazzar, and he probably did not even know who Daniel was. And during the many changes in the monarchy, Daniel was probably in semi-retirement, or at least his advice and counsel was not wanted.
Brother Hutchings, as we read in the account of Belshazzar's party here in chapter 5, Daniel was finally brought in when in the midst of this drunken celebration, a hand appeared on the wall and wrote, "Many, many tekel upharsin." Would you comment on the meaning of this message from God to Belshazzar?
Well, the writing on the wall was in Aramaic, and Belshazzar could not evidently read Aramaic, and it was arranged in acrostic style also, as shown in the Talmud. Rather than reading from left to right or from right to left, it should have been read from top to bottom. But Daniel didn't have any trouble either reading or decoding it. Now, many in the Aramaic means number. The double wording means that God has numbered the years of the Babylonian Empire and that the number had expired. In other words, Daniel told Belshazzar that his number was up. The prophet Jeremiah prophesied that Israel would be held captive by Babylon for a generation, 70 full years. The appearance of Daniel before Belshazzar came at the end of the seventh year of Babylonian captivity. Now, tekel. Tekel means to weigh, to test the net worth of gold, silver, or other commodities according to weight standards. God's scale or balances weigh peoples, rulers, and nations. We read in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 3, "The Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." Job chapter 31, verse 6, "Let me be weighed in an even balance that God may know mine integrity." Psalm 62, 9, "Men of high degrees are to be laid in the balance." Men's balances may swing like a pendulum in determining innocence or guilt, but God's balances are accurate and are known to him in all his ways. Our debts and our thoughts, everything is weighed in God's balances. So God weighed Belshazzar, and though he may have made a good dishwasher, he certainly wasn't a king. The people of Babylon were just as guilty as he was. I have led a dozen or more tours to Turkey, and I frequently notice a sign at local stores or clubs with the word tekel. On a recent tour, it finally dawned on me that this was one of the words written on the wall at Belshazzar's party. So I asked our guide, Dr. Hallett, what the word meant. He looked somewhat puzzled, but said it meant that this was a store or club where wine, whiskey, or strong drink could be purchased. Turkey is one of the very few Muslim countries where alcoholic beverage can be bought or dispensed. Turkey was an important province in the Persian Empire, and Daniel's books and writings were held in high esteem even after his death. It may be possible that the word for wine or whiskey in the Turkey language may have been taken from Daniel's account of Belshazzar's drunken banquet. Now, the next word is upharsin. A commentary on the Aramaic text indicates that upharsin is a combination of two words, peres, meaning to break or divide, and pharsin, meaning the Persian. Thus, the interpretation given to Daniel The kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Now, Daniel was promised a purple coat, a solid gold chain, and the office of third ruler in the kingdom if he would interpret the writing. Of course, Belshazzar didn't offer him to make him the first ruler because that was his job. And Daniel refused his gifts but said he would interpret the writing anyway.
The fifth chapter of Daniel, as all the other chapters, certainly has a message for our nation today, doesn't it, Brother Hutchings?
It certainly does. We read in Daniel 12:1 of the time when the sealed book of Daniel would be unsealed or understood by the signs of the time. We read, "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of the people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be written in the book." Now we notice the stress is on that time. And in Revelation 1:3 we read, "The time is at hand." The time is the time that Daniel told would come. And we read in Revelation 6:5 that at the beginning of the tribulation, the black horse of death bears a rider with a balance in his hand. And I am concerned that our nation will be weighed in the balances and be found wanting. As a nation, we are just as guilty as Babylon was when it fell.
I think you're right, Brother Hutchings. And, you know, it's interesting that you cite the book of Revelation because to fully understand end-time events, we need that book of the Bible. As a matter of fact, I remember a number of years ago when I was in an intense study of the book of Revelation that we also delved deeply into the book of Daniel. So the two books of the Bible complement each other, and the commentaries Brother Hutchings has written on them fit well together as well. You can get one copy of Daniel the Prophet, the newly updated commentary, for a gift of $15. If you want more of the 336-page book, we'll send three copies for a gift of $40. The 224-page Revelation for today is offered at a special gift amount during this series, so now's the time to get it too. One copy for a gift of $15. If you want both books at the same time, the gift amount is $25. And don't forget the 12 programs in the series. They're offered on tape or CD for a gift of $30. To get any or all of these valuable resources, call 1-800-652-1144. That number again is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit our website at swrc.com. The call center is open from 7:30 in the morning until 6 in the evening, Central Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. At other hours, leave a message on the voicemail. There are some listeners we need to hear from. If you hear these programs over WOKU in West Virginia or WOKT in Kentucky, we really do need to know you're there. So give us a call or drop a note in the mail right away. Your response could mean the difference in whether or not we continue on these stations. It's time now for a Bible in the News report over most of these stations. Join us tomorrow as we examine Chapter 6 in the Book of Daniel on your Watchman on the Wall program, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries Question and Answer. This is the second in a series of Q&As on the Psalms of Cursing, where the psalmist calls down judgment upon the wicked. Dr. Larry Spargimino is answering questions regarding these psalms. Brother Larry, you voiced the view that in these psalms, God is expressing his indignation against the wicked, but doesn't Jesus say that we are to turn the other cheek?
Well, Jerry, he sure does. But there is nothing in the Psalms of imprecation that contradicts this. Jesus is telling us not to take personal revenge. In the Psalms of imprecation, the psalmist never tells us to take revenge. He is asking God to bring judgment upon the wicked.
People think of Jesus as forgiving and compliant.
Well, yes, Jesus is forgiving, but he is not compliant. He doesn't bend to the evil desires of men. We have to stress that what is being called for in these Psalms is God's judgment on evildoers. Nowhere in the Bible, even in the Old Testament, do we find any indication that the Scripture teaches personal retaliation. The imprecatory Psalms give no counsel for personal revenge. In fact, in Romans 12, verses 19 through 21, we read this, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." Indeed, God will repay. As we study the New Testament, we are confronted with the inescapable fact that there are certain portions of the New Testament that are also in the spirit of the imprecatory Psalms. In 2 Thessalonians 2, we read this, "Seeing it is a righteous thing with God to recompense tribulation to them that trouble you, in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not God, and that obey not the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, who shall be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord." Throughout the Bible, we see God revealing his righteous retribution. It is part of the divine nature. How then can it be wrong for God to exercise what is fundamental to his nature? Would we silence God and tell him that he can't be God?
The modern church might want to do that. I think the problem that some people have with the imprecatory Psalms comes from the church itself. Churches are more interested in feeling good than in hearing what the Bible has to say about who God is and what he expects of us. These Psalms speak of the desire of the psalmist for the glory of God to be manifested in the judgment of his enemies. Have our thoughts and prayers become so man-centered that we are actually afraid to pray prayers that are for God's glory?
Well, Jerry, the church as a whole probably has. One day, God's kingdom will come in all of its glory, but that cannot happen without the destruction of Satan's kingdom. Yet the kingdom of Satan cannot be destroyed unless there is also judgment upon those who are Satan's agents doing his will. The imprecatory Psalms call on God to bring that reality to pass.
And that's today's question and answer from Southwest Radio Ministries. Each month, Q&As and Bible in the News reports are published in a booklet. To get a copy, call, write, or visit our website to request it. Please include a gift of $3 to cover shipping and handling. Call 800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit the website at swrc.com. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a question and answer or Bible in the News report.